but also on the behalf of the community which lives under the city of Echelrome. Help them too. This is my request, dear Rosgard. Will you help us?
Yes, I nodded heavily. I'll help. You have received the quest, Crabber Invasion. Rid the bog creature community residing under Algora and Echelrome from the threat of crabbers. Minimum conditions for the task, to completely destroy crabber search parties in the sewers. Reward, information about the right glove of the legendary set of the Silver Legend. So, I found a lead, it had seemed, about the legendary equipment. About the whole situation, only one thing bothered me. How did the bastard elder know that I was looking for the legendary set? I specifically didn't blabber, especially not to bog creatures. Marusha saw a part of the Silver Legend on me, and instantly remembered where he had seen such a thing before. I deeply doubted this. And why think about it anyway? I better ask away.
"Thank you, O great hero," said the elder in response to my silence. "If you need our modest help, then the kind, sympathetic bog creatures will be happy to help you."
"I will need it," I immediately responded. Marusha grimaced involuntarily. I see that he didn't particularly want to help. Well, right, he put all his problems on the back of a hero and his cub. Way to go, Gramps. "I want answers to questions," I began busily, "and a guide to the places where the crabbers are, and it would be better not to get there on foot, but on your marvelous water horse."
"I won't give him. He's still young," severely said the old man. "I will give you answers, however. If I know, I'll tell you. There is a guide also, Stump Eyes."
"Eh?"
"And why is he not good enough?"
"The fact that he can never stop thinking about fish."
"Fish are good,"
sighed Marusha, mechanically rubbing his belly. "A guide, thinking only about the fish? That is bad."
"There is no other,"
sighed the elder bitterly.
"So, Stump Eyes it is. You can swim on him like a horse. Wrap your arms around his neck, press yourself to his back."
"No, thanks. I'll do without a horse. Just let him be a guide only."
"Okay. So, what did you want to ask about? Ask, dear Rosgard."
"How did you know that I'm looking for the Silver Legend?"
"Oh, that is a good question, a wise question. I'll start it. First, Stump Eyes came to us, exhausted by fear and hard work. I warmed him up, gave him fish, let him soak among the gentle dibblids, and then he told us his sad story, about how he stole a piece of fish for which he was expelled, about his hapless wanderings, and about how you defended him twice. That's how I found out about your heroic name. And then I pondered how to have you help us end our terrible grief, how to persuade you to come down here. I thought and thought, thought and thought, thought and thought,
dear Marusha,
and thought up nothing. I sat, pouring tears of grief. That's when my old lady showed."
"Stop your old lady?"
"Who else's? Ever since she washed in here on that rainy day, we have lived here, my one and only."
"And what did she say to you?"
"At first, nothing. She sat in a puddle, mud smeared thickly on her cheeks, two white leeches of her neck for beauty, her head sprinkled with sand, and started waiting."
"For what?"
"Her attention."
Marusha almost howled, his feelings overflowing.
"And she got it. She appeared. My woman's eyes lit up with fire. Snakes came out from everywhere and began to dance around her, drawing patterns in the dirt. A pillar of steam above her. Snakes! The dibblids wailed."
"Fire in her eyes?" I asked. "Snakes? The wailing of dibblids? Okay. And who exactly answered the call of the old lady?"
"She herself."
"Who she, Gramps? What is the name?"
"One living up high, High above the unhappy and miserable bog creatures, the goddess, the merciful and great goddess, Snesse. She came to the call. I call and I call, but she never answers me, and I am the oldest here. And once she called, then the Great One responded immediately, and the mouth of my old lady began to move. She told me that such a hero like you isn't lured by money or treasures. Iridescent shells won't soften your heart. But if you say two magic words loud and clear, silver, legend, then you will surely listen. I was told where to find the thing. She sent a vision right into my head. I saw it with my own eyes. And it was she who told me where you are. She went with me in search of you. Wants to exchange a few words with you herself.
I thought back to the old lady, swimming up the vertical falling water at a breakneck pace. And as the log falls on her head, the elder saying cheerfully,
"She'll swim out, she always does."
Making my frozen lips move with difficulty, I hardly uttered, "Gramps, and your lady, will she return soon?"
"My old lady?"
"Uh-huh."
"Yes, very soon. She is fast, and you'll talk."
"Gramps?"
"Eh?"
"And where is the exit here? Where's the exit?"
"When you decide to leave, Stump Eyes will show you."
"I'm leaving now. Stumpy! Stump Eyes! Where have you gone, damn angler? Come here!"
"In a hurry to do heroic deeds?"
joyfully jumped Marusha. "Exactly. I just can't wait. Right now I want to go and do something heroic. Granddaddy, call Stumpy here, and we will rush towards victory."
"What a hero! That I understand. Stumpy! Bulgli! Govasyuk Matyuk! Shukra Mabsula!"
"Here!"
I heard a cry, accompanied by the wet slapping of feet on dirt.
"So long that you haven't completed the objective, he'll always be there,"
Marusha spoke kindly.
"He will help you explore and show the way, catch fish, help carry the load, and you care for him and protect him."
"All right," I nodded quickly. "Consider it done. Stump, go!"
"Stumpy! Stump, he's my older brother!"
"Fine, Stumpy, let's go. Show me the exit. The hero is in a terrible hurry." The urgent evacuation was successful. I was sitting cross-legged aboard a crooked raft, linked together from rotten boards and logs. From the raft came a rope tied about the waist of Stump Eyes, who served as the driver for the whole structure, working with might to pull me along and snorting loudly. The underwater passage leading to the monastery we had safely passed, and we would have to dive again, which Tyrant would not like. After this, very little remained to many of the exits leading directly to the city. Soon we would have to walk a little. No worries, Tyrant could hunt on the local residents. It was time to transform my pup into an evil wolf, so that the name would match at least. To think that right now he only terrorized butterflies and rabbits? I absolutely did not want to meet with the old lady. Moreover, I was afraid of this meeting, because I was now aware of what she was. As soon as the elder stammered fiery eyes and dancing snakes, I immediately smelled napalm and went for the exit. This isn't just any old lady. She is a temple priestess. The combination of words was only ever uttered with respect, and preferably in a whisper. It could be loud, so long as you were not in the temple, because the priestesses leave the sanctuary very rarely. The temple priestess in a drain meant only one thing. She was exiled from her tribe, and the reason was most likely serious. That's if you believe the words of the old bog creature. The priestess was banished, but the patronage of Snesse was not lost. Tribal squabbles are one thing, but Snesse is another. Temple priests and priestesses, without the help of their deity, are extremely skilled warriors and mages, well-trained and superbly equipped. But sometimes, when they cannot handle a situation themselves, they call upon their god, and their prayers are not unanswered. After that, the priest has the power of not just a blessing, but also of a particle of divine power. And the priest becomes a monstrous machine of death. Though, for not very long, the game legend and rules both state that earthly bodies cannot stand a particle of God for very long, but even a few seconds is enough. Hence there is such a reverence for temple priests. An attack on a temple is the same as jumping into a meat grinder. Myrtle was one, too. Only Gravital's fall could explain the fact that the priestess could be slain by some measly werewolf. If Gravital hadn't fallen, Myrtle would have torn Grimm to pieces with her bare hands. But Gravital fell, and Myrtle lost everything, and fell prey to Grimm's beastly nature. The result was already known. A love story with a dramatic finale, as told by many books in Valdira. Not only a local could become a temple priest, but also a player. However, it is very difficult to attain this honor. Again, the attention of God cannot be used for any goal. The gods will not understand if you ask them for the power to attack a peaceful caravan in a sleepy town, and the Dark Ones will not understand if you use their power for good. I wasn't going to become a priest in a temple, but what was important to me was another matter, that from the mouths of the temple priests, God can express his will. The same body can be controlled immediately if desired, as a living puppet. But this is so only for locals. Players are not affected. In any case, if I were to speak to the possessed woman, I am sure she would ask me about the sleeping girl in my private room. I would have refused to hand over the child, and as a result, would have been sent to the nearest revival port by the woman. Personally, Snesse cannot harm me, of course. She cannot kill or curse me. But she has fanatics. Even without divine power, the old woman is enough to kill me. If she is, in fact, a temple priestess, of which I am almost certain. It's not death which scares me. It's the loss of my equipment. It would all be left on the island where the old woman lives permanently. She wouldn't have let me near my remains. Given that I am wearing several legendary items, such an outcome would be a complete tragedy. That's why I was getting out. Or rather, I was sitting on a raft, waiting tensely, watching the grunting effort of the bog creature, who rowed with all his might. What pleased me, Stumpeyes rowed confidently, seemingly knowing exactly the location of the exit. In the intricate maze of Algora catacombs, this is extremely important. Otherwise, you can get lost here for a very long time. On the right bank there was a strange scream, in which I could almost discern some cursing, or a simple cry. I didn't attach much importance to it, but the bog creature suddenly stiffened his legs and went forwards at twice the speed. Listening, I heard him murmur, "It isn't good, not good at all, oh, very, very bad." Strange, some local venomous creature, quite possible. The catacombs of Algora are a totally different world. And very soon I will have to plunge right into this world. Somewhere here, in the narrow corridors and damp, musty underground rivers, is a wandering crabber search party. The rattle of wet feet against stone, the creaking shells, the clicks of giant claws, and fury sparkling in big eyes. The crabbers were searching, and I had to stop them. This was a minimum. It wasn't in vain that in the job description, destroying the crabbers was only a minimal condition. There may be other variants. Although I was sure of one thing. Speaking with the crabbers would not work. Never. They do not agree with anyone aside from their own relatives, and they only see the others as prey. Therefore, I only see two options at the moment. Either I destroy these amphibians, where they find whatever they are looking for in the catacombs. And I know that I cannot cope alone. Therefore, whether I want it or not, it will be necessary to assemble a team, to stock up on weapons, and descend only then into the dungeon. But there is no alternative. Hell, I guess I know one team which can never get enough adventure. But there aren't many normal and adequate ones there. But I'm not ideal myself. But money... What kind of money will be necessary for this job? The quest may take a long time. Stumpy, how much longer? I asked, defeated.
We are almost there,
cheerfully quipped the bog creature.
Soon, the staircase up. But...
But?
But there are almost no fish there. It's better here, Rosgard.
Come on, row.
There are only small fish there, and if you eat them, sent to prison. Evil!
You shouldn't put your paws in other people's aquariums. I had to pay the fine for you. Shit, where am I going to find money? Oh, Kira, love of mine, I wonder if you will let me borrow some. By the way, a battle with crabbers in the dungeon is still a great way to pump up my character. It was time to grow up a little. I ought to also distribute my points, too, and to do so wisely. But what am I saying? As if I had a choice. All towards intelligence and wisdom. All for the sake of mana. So I can read a unique spell. Chapter 6. Biting Prices. Before Descending into Darkness. On the Tracks of the Crabbers. Battle.
I'm telling you, this cannot be.
Of course it can, good sir. The gods of light agree. The most important reasonable price. What could be less? That would be giving it away for free.
The price is too high, and that's final. Reduce it a little bit more.
Oh, God, merciful gods, protect me against the robber. I'll go bankrupt. I'll be ruined. This conversation was so loud that it could be heard over half the street. The noise was coming from a small trade shop, modestly perched between the leather and furniture shop. The situation was aggravated by the fact that a lot of players had decided to join in. Hearing the altercation, they decided to join to satisfy their curiosity. It's not every day that you see a half-orc with a truly tremendous backpack so fiercely trading that his fangs were dripping in foam. And boy can Baum argue. The only problem was that the process took too long, and the owner of the shop, a frail little man with incredibly rosy cheeks, reluctantly yielded to the pressure and fought for every copper coin. I should have begun to worry when I saw the wide grin on his green-fanged face. And now it was too late. I had to keep the passive expression on my face without showing any sign of impatience. And so we continued sitting, awaiting the end of the negotiations. Opposite the shop was a narrow dead end in which were cluttered many rejected items, such as cracked barrels and furniture made unsuccessfully. We huddled there in order not to be an eyesore, and I especially huddled between two barrels in such a way that no passerby would see my nickname. A little further down, on a crooked dining table, sat Kaelin, absorbed in reading a thick tome, holding it in her delicate hands. In real life, such a book would easily weigh 10 kilos. Here, just as much, but here we are endowed with greater strength. At the foot of the table, and near the feet of Kaelin, sat Doc, also hunched over books with yellowed pages, perhaps looking for ways to remove appendicitis. Nearby was Cray, who was unusually silent, casting jealous glances at Doc, who was sitting almost too close to Kaelin's legs. Cray was throwing looks, but didn't say anything out loud. I didn't know what had been said between Kaelin and Cray since our last adventure, but the fact remained that a conversation had indeed taken place. In the darkest corner of the alley sat the bog creature. He had climbed into a rotten box, gathered up his legs, and immediately vanished from sight. A great mystery. His disguise would have worked if Stumpy kept his silence. But now from the box came wheezing, smacking, and other sounds associated with the greedy consumption of fish. The marsh extortionist had almost talked me out of my lunch, and I had to buy him 3 hefty river fish. Our professional ass was negotiating in the trading store. The bald-headed elf? Orbit was hanging, in the literal sense of the word. Looking up, I looked at the dirty heel swaying above my head and let out another sigh.
Above me hung the raggedy bald elf, with drooping chin and stream of saliva from his open mouth, his tongue out. And, over his shoulder, a ghostly gray domesticated spirit, playing the role of additional decorations, as though the elf soul had left the body, but had not yet flown. Damn. It was all my fault. The teammates had happily gathered at my call, all agreed to the mission, chipped in some money based on the principle of give what you can, and made a list and stomped off to purchase. At the outskirts of Algora, because Baum had plaintively announced that everything was cheaper there and the sellers more compliant, while he was going around the shops, I asked everyone to lay low. Fortunately, the little dead end was very useful for this matter. My request was followed. Doc and Kalin immediately sat down and began to read. The dwarf leaned back against the wall and froze. And Orbit? Orbit went and hanged himself. That was the trouble. Upon hearing my request, the elf thought, for 5 minutes, and then found a shaggy rope nearby, threw it over some blackened wooden beams, summoned the spirit, and hanged himself, complaining about the absence of buzzing flies. I have no idea why the bald elf decided that a hanging corpse in an alley would not attract attention, in my opinion quite the opposite, especially if a patrol of city guards passed by here. Damn. Orbit didn't react to my exhortations. He had hung himself, and therefore he could not hear or see. And there was the barely audible yet present howling of the ghost above his head. The hope was only that Baum would grow tired of haggling and finally make a purchase. Well, and we were also waiting. Another comrade was going to join us at any moment. Previously, I rarely encountered such difficulties, because as Crash Shot, I had preferred playing alone. I rarely set foot in group adventures, and if I did, only for the necessary time. Crash Shot didn't speak to anyone, and no one asked. He came, performed his task, and left. But Rosgard, this incarnation, had become the head of an extremely strange and inconsistent company. If I had asked, the bald elf would have dragged in a bag of gold from his sister, the Baroness. But this was too much. I didn't want to owe the Sleepless Clan, especially in such trifles. Therefore, in collecting money for the mission, I said, "Bring what you can." And Orbit generously presented me with 4 blackened copper coins, plus a slice of purple glass, a bottle cap, and a dog collar of +3 protection. The collar was useful, new clothes for Tyrant. Everything else I hesitated throwing away and gave to Baum, who didn't hesitate to put everything away into his bottomless bag. "Hey!" a familiar voice rang out. "Hi, Kira," I sighed, listlessly waving to the girl. "You made it."
"Hi! What's this?"
the girl asked, clearly about the bald elf, whose saliva was dripping onto my shoes. "He's hanging," I shrugged. "Practicing."
"For what?"
"Hanging," I muttered. "Wow," Kira summed up.
"Yeah," I said.
"You can't even imagine how interesting it gets sometimes. Hey, guys, meet Kira, warrior, paladin, and our future ally."
"Gray,"
hoarsely said the dwarf, nodding.
"Hello," smiled the doctor happily. "I'm Doc, healer, your future salvation from the wounds of death, the one who will drag you out of the open gates of hell, risking his own life, the one who..."
"Doc!" All right," coughed the embarrassed doctor. "It's just such a good book."
"Kalin Seeker,"
she waved her hand, looking at the new companion with a wistful expression.
"Fighting sorceress."
The ghost above Orbit's head howled piteously.
"That's Orbit," I sighed.
"A class so strange I couldn't even explain it. Though he is an elf, in any case."
"I'm Kira,"
she smiled at all of them, brushing a lock of hair away from her face.
"I am a paladin."
"You heal?"
Doc was startled. His joy was understandable. Now he was responsible for the lives of his party members a little less.
"And maim?" confirmed Kira, looking for some reason at me. When in real life I would have laughed at this statement, in the world of Valdira it commanded much greater respect. When you see a warrior in glittering silver armor with a hefty sword in front of you, it looks impressive, not to take into account the spiked maces hanging from her belt, along with some narrow throwing knives, high boots to the knee and spikes on each of them. If such a kick falls between the legs, well, the level speaks for itself, 1/100. Kira had improved her stats since the last time I saw her, absolutely pumped her character long and hard, without the generous and comprehensive support of the albatrosses. If she would have made every effort and combined it with their help, she would have achieved better results. Yes, support defines everything, especially if a clan has a location in which no outsiders are allowed, in which everything is studied down to the smallest subtleties. Kira was clearly tired from working with her favorite clan. Kira is the only one, however, who sported a clan badge next to her nickname. On her shoulder and knee pads were engraved the wings of an albatross. "Beautiful," I admitted, admiring the warrior. "So, you brought the gold?"
"Brought it,"
she replied, giving me a linen bag. "Here, you freeloader."
"What, what?" I was offended. "I do not freeload, and the gold is not for me, but for the greediest of all of us."
"And who might this be?"
"Do you hear the sounds coming from the shop?"
butted in Doc.
"You gotta go there. There at the counter is a hefty half-orc, foaming at his mouth from greed. Give the bag to him."
"Just make sure that the shopkeeper doesn't see it," I added. "Give it quietly."
"What a good start," snapped Kira. "Okay, I'll go and give. And when are we going to embark, boss?"
"I'll go over it later," I assured her.
"And who is in that box crunching over there? And munching. Sounds so juicy."
"A bog creature," I hung my head bitterly. "Eating fish. Go give the gold. Time to wrap up these purchases."
The paladin turned herself around and gave one last look at the dirty heels of the elf and stamped off to the shops. She stomped as an elephant, and under her steel feet some failed furniture shattered into chips.
"And who's that?" Kaelin asked.
"My friend," I answered. "We did some quests together. A good friend for a party."
"She had good equipment,"
Cray nodded, overjoyed by the presence of another girl in our group. Now not everyone would be staring at the precious Kaelin, although no one was really doing so in the first place.
"I wasn't going to tell everyone that I was acquainted with Kira in real life. I wouldn't disclose such important information. Just had to make sure Kira herself didn't say anything. I would have to warn her. Damn, we still have to coordinate our action plan. Good thing we have some sort of experience. We have worked in similar conditions."
"Are there any Proteus there?" Doc asked, wistfully glancing at the anti-prot boots in his own bag.
"There could be anything," I said. "Catacombs of Algora are... well, the devil himself will break his leg there."
"So I should put on the boots," Doc understood.
"All right.
And is it true that there's floating..."
"What?" I didn't understand, Kaelin.
"Well, it. The sewage."
"Nah," I shook my head. "It's realistic, but not to that degree. But it's full of water, entire rivers and canals. There is even a waterfall and a lake, and it's one big maze."
"And we won't get lost?"
"Teleport scrolls are on the shopping list," I reassured her. "Besides, we have a guide."
"Oh, they're coming!" Kaelin was animated. "At last! I'm tired of waiting. Are we far from the entrance of the sewer?"
"Not really," I snorted, pointing a thumb at the blank wall of the alley. "There's a hatch. We will dive in right there. Orbit, enough hanging. It's time to sink. Prepare to dive."
From a distance, our brave squad moved like a bright ball of light, in which one could make out a few vague figures.
The light of 4 fireflies at once literally destroyed the darkness, leaving not even the smallest shadow. The brightness wasn't a waste. Underground inhabitants usually don't like extra light, so we let them run at the sight of us. Steel footwear rattled on the mossy stone floor, and the first wooden door that greeted us was kicked out of the way with a powerful kick by Kira. The door literally shattered, as if a grenade went off. A paladin is a scary thing, a self-healing tank with deadly weapons. Kira hadn't achieved nearly all of the benefits of her class, but experience was everything. She knew how to use her skills to make the most of it. She had the greatest chance of survival in the event of a surprise attack. Accordingly, she went ahead of our close-knit group. Just behind her trotted the bog creature in small steps, jabbing crooked fingers in one direction after another. The pair looked like the fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, only our version was simply dystrophic. The formal leader of the party was me, formally. But Kira was in the lead in overall standings. This was without a doubt. For several reasons. First, she clearly liked to lead people. Secondly, a knight in shining armor at the front looked more serious than a skinny mage wrapped in rags. A sparkling aura literally came from Kira. We felt its full restoring effect. The official name of it was the Aura of the Cheerful Spirit, an ability tied to the wisdom of a character, not the intellect. The aura was unpretentious, but reduced our fatigue, and this was indispensable, because we all had different levels of endurance. And it became a problem when the group came to combat areas. If the area had been a hilly terrain, many would have already had to stop and rest. The drainage of Algora is worse, endless descents, climbs, and sometimes vertical. So Kira activated the aura, and our ability equalized. Just behind the defender came 2 brave warriors, Kray and Bomb. Kray went easily, enjoying the benefits of his race, turning from head to side to side. He was practically unbothered. We had walked for an hour, and during this time, Kray had noticed 2 hiding places and a trap with poisoned thorns. At the same time, the dwarf was sharpening his skills, while we saw nothing other than bare walls. Bum was like a mournful petitioner. He walked in a half-bent position, his head bowed. Bum was involved in gathering, taking everything. And there was nothing to gather here other than mice, woodlice, slugs, rats, and spiders. He was competing with Tyrant, who I was not forgetting to train. Rats simply went mad at his guttural growl when the 2 competitors threw themselves at the prey, wanting to be the first to get to the snacks. And all the others, including myself, went on modestly behind, not forgetting to glance back. Kaelin was practicing a spell. Seeing the effect, I was overcome with jealousy and immediately added it to my list of future acquisitions. The spell was String of Fire. Casting this, the mage sees before them a 3-meter fiery thread rushing straight ahead. Using this against a variety of small creatures is perfect. This is a mauler. It continues to go forwards up to 10 meters until it reaches the first target, and it can be cast anywhere. Kaelin practiced this way, raised her hands above her head, and released the fiery threads. The spiders on the ceiling obviously didn't like this, and they rushed to attack, falling at the mercy of Kira or other soldiers. Not one spider made it to us. There was one, particularly smart and healthy, agile, scuttling across the ceiling, but the bald elf got it with his terrible knife. The spider died a horrible death, and turned into a ghost with many glowing eyes, happily running around his new master and hissing nastily. And then Signor Cristallino named the ghostly spider Nathan. Nathan ran over ahead, ghostly legs rustling, poking his nose into all the dark slots. Scary. I don't know all the subtleties of Orbit's class, but one thing is for sure. If the elf finds a godly patron in the future, it will definitely be a dark god. Because this is one step away from necromancy. Next, there's only worse.
After all, Orbit took not the bodies of his defeated enemies, but their immortal souls. The bald elf would not even be able to go into a light temple. The priests would immediately attack him. And not just the priests. I already warned Kira of Orbit's dark class, so that she wouldn't later run into trouble, because Kyrea is a light paladin, and paladins are forbidden to rub shoulders with the likes of the bald elf. To talk, of course, was possible, but to create alliances was downright impossible, an immediate hit to karma. What is called grace to the paladin is like a sharp knife across his throat. Fortunately, Kyrea had not yet sworn allegiance to any of the gods of light, so she could be in a group with anyone, regardless of light and dark sides. I had warned Orbit, too, by the way, but the bald elf only moved his ears and gave his catchphrase, "Interesting!" Damn, some group I have come up with here. I had begun to calculate the pros and cons, but my adventurers didn't seem to care. Maybe that's how one should play, just enjoy the game?
"Very, very near, my lady,"
piped up the bog creature in a thin voice, running ahead and looking Kira in the eyes. He even folded his hand on his chest for effect. "My lady? Bastard. Forgot who saved him from so many troubles, damn swamp beaver."
"My honey,"
murmured Kirea, holding out her hand to the bog creature.
"Here's some smoked fish. Have some."
Apparently I made some evil hiss, because the two of them turned to me, the hastily chewing bog creature and Kirea.
"What, the poor thing is hungry," said Kira. "She always has fish," said Stumpy. "Delicious."
"And I always have an axe," I wanted to say, but resisted and waved my hand. "Forget him."
"Looks like we're almost there,"
added the girl, taking her shield from behind her back.
"How much longer to go, honey?" "Very, very little, my lady," reported the bog creature cheerfully. 45 dives and strokes. We are still far from their nest, but they walk around here. They harass the poor bog creatures."
Too close to the surface, these crabbers. Or do I exaggerate? I've lost count of the corridors, stairs, and turns. The catacombs are deceptive. And the bog creature has probably warned of the security patrols. Good. I wasn't going to break into their camp. We would run into one initially and evaluate our combat capability.
"Ready!"
roared Kira and I in unison. Ugh, goodbye leadership.
"Sorry,"
apologized the paladin, removing the notes of command in her voice. "It happens," I snorted. "Okay, guys, everything like it was in the breeding grounds, but worse."
"Sounds cheery. Damn it!"
Doc panicked, probably imagining that he could not cope if, one after the other, his companions would fly to the revival location, sending curses upon the incompetent healer. Everything is always blamed on them. "Don't worry," I advised Doc. "Work according to the law of traffic lights, and everything will be okay. You started the aura?"
"Already, ha!"
In the hand of the doctor was a folded whip, the same Ajaj, to whip us into shape. "Well done," I chuckled.
"BDSM party?"
Kira lifted a brow.
"Interesting." "Yes," agreed the bald elf. "Interesting."
"Orbit, will you be able to turn one crabber into a spirit?" I asked. "Such a powerful ghost would make a good ally."
"If I kill it, then,"
said the elf, taking his knife from his bag,
"I'll kill it and call it...
"You think about it," I nodded. "Guys, if anything, leave the last crabber at low health and leave him for Orbit."
"If the crabber doesn't bring us to that point,"
snorted Kaelin, pulling on her gloves, a thin black leather with glowing patterns, leaving the inside of the palm bare. "Elegant, but mine is better, though it has nothing to do with the magician class." Damn, I imagined the storm of questioning I'd have to endure if the comrades would see my legendary armor. Bomb would nearly strangle me. another sensation for my fans. "Ready?" I asked, looking at the order of battle. "Okay. Stumpy, lead the way. Guys, keep an eye on the bog creature. We cannot lose him. Tyrant, come here. Enough eating mice."
"Ruff,"
said the cub, running up to me, and I also had to look after Tyrant.
"I'll watch after the honey," Kira reassured me, gently scratching the bog creature in between the ears. "My honey, I won't let anyone hurt you." "Oh, thank you, my lady," said the stump.
"Huh," I grumbled. "Let's move. I want crab soup."
"And I," said the bog creature. "Woohoo, it has fish in it."
"You've been talking a lot," I winced. "I would smash you on the head, but you're the guide."
"I can slay him," suggested the bald elf, approaching me. "He'll be a spirit guide. I'll name him Coot."
"Uh-huh,"
said the bog creature to this proposal, hiding behind Kira. "For now, we'll refrain." I looked at the knife-wielding elf. "Stumpy, onwards." Honestly, I had fucked up completely. Not everyone could spot this creature, and I didn't expect to anyway, but the problem was that at the critical moment, I was unable to utter any smart thing. It went like this. We continued our proud march through the underground catacombs of Algora, scaring small animals and filling the corridors with the gloomy echo of steps. Guided by Stumpy, we turned into a wide passage, and at that moment everything began to happen. I still had time to notice a strange, lumpy growth on one of the moss-covered walls when this very growth came to life and with one sharp movement stepped to the bog creature. A giant crab claw flashed at the thick neck and a flash of silver metal. Kirea worked at lightning speed, having to stop his weapon. Her sword pitifully cracked and shattered into two unequal parts. Kira pushed the bog creature back, moving him out of the way, and at the same time hitting the crabber with the edge of her shield. Bam! Tink! Rattle! All took literally 2 seconds. A surprise attack. An attempt at a fatal blow. The salvation of the bog creature. Kira had already stepped back, hiding behind the shield and pushing Stumpy back, and I was still standing like a complete fool, gasping for air like a fish thrown ashore. But I wasn't the only one frozen in shock. This was forgivable. I was the leader. The leader fucked up in the most critical moment. The claw of the crabber flashed again, and Kirea was hurled back a step. The famous kick of the crabbers, when the claw is used as a powerful ramming weapon, stunning and knocking opponents off their feet. Kirea the Protectress lived up to her name, and not only stayed on her feet, but also kept the shield. At that moment I came back to life and hoarsely shouted, "Hit him! Cray! Bomb! Cover Kira!" I shouted completely useless commands, but they slowly recovered and started to act by the principle of do what you can. A shout came from Kaelin, forgetting to change the spell cast of Fiery Thread, which now had flown over the balding head of the bog creature and gotten Kira in the back. "Stone Peaks, Kaelin!" I snapped, jumping to one side and exposing the hand charged with the thorn wall. "Stone Peaks!" "Sorry," the woman shouted, frantically shuffling spells. Something crashed. Cray and Bomb were engaged in battle, standing on either side of Kira and crashing the crabber. The monster didn't remain inactive, and hit Bomb with a long leaf-shaped spear. Damn it! On the back of Kirea whipped the Ajaj. Our experienced paladin had lost quite a bit of life. Doc panicked, and in full turmoil began to lash all he could. I took aim at the middle of the corridor, at the bony frame of the crabber, and didn't have a chance to cast the wall because the whip slapped into my face. Startled, I stumbled away and hit my head against the stone wall. Before my eyes flashed smiling stars, literally. Another trick of Valdira, always at the wrong time. Fuck! "Doc, enough whipping!" I shouted, putting up my hand again among the stars and looking for my target. "Easy!" A quiet rustling, and among the crabber rose prickly rose bushes with jaunty white flowers.
The monster was not diminished in life by even one point, though now he actively tossed among the thorns. Armor. Only now it dawned on me, my miserable thorns were nothing to the crabber. They were simply breaking off against his unyielding armor. But the thorny wall at least significantly slowed him down, enveloping his arms and legs. "Damn it!" I yelled, shuffling spells. The crabber issued a high-pitched, squeaky sound, more like the cry of a dolphin, a damned cage bird singing. He's calling back up. Bam! Directly under the crabber rose a hefty stone peak and hit him with a crunch at all four legs.
"Ooh!"
The males in the group groaned in chorus, unable to resist sympathizing with the sufferer. The crabber was not especially injured from the hit, and wasn't going to bend in male pain. He had armor there, too.
"Press him against the wall," Kira growled, pressing onwards. "Stumpy, back. Cray, Bomb, corner the freak. Get him in the armpits when he raises his hands, and in the knees there are cracks in the armor there. Thrust deep and turn."
The experienced warrior began to command, of which I was only glad. I was slightly confused.
"Kaelin, when we press him to the wall, right away cast a few peaks under his thighs," she continued to yell, actively wielding her shield. "Russ, the wall is no longer cast."
"Got it," I cried, falling to my knees and peeking out between the warriors to cast the spell. I was aiming right at his face, at the strange helmet with eyes, and that's where it hit. The crabber furiously screeched, clearly offended by this. The half-orc didn't miss his chance, delivering several crushing blows on the head of the crabber. The banging on the head of the monster produced a large cracking sound. The armor was breaking. From somewhere in the ceiling collapsed Nathan the Ghost, clutching his long legs into the eyes of the enemy. Somewhere in the misty body I saw a flash of purple, and the crabber howled as though he were being pumped with acid.
"Well done!"
Kirea snapped, momentarily lifting her shield and kicking the crabber in the chest. The crabber reciprocated, and so well that Doc immediately had something to do with his whip. Bomb's life slipped by a third from a severe blow to the throat. At least not a crit. Our doctor again began enthusiastically whipping the back of the orc.
"Push him with your shields!"
the paladin shouted, ignoring the spells cast by Kaelin and I. All three of the soldiers stepped forwards in a wall of shields. The ugly opponent jerked his broken head and punched the shields with both hands, and they were forced to take a step back.
"More! More!"
Kira cheered. The warriors stepped forward again, pressing the enemy to the wall. With a thud, the crabber hit the wall and shook his head, pouring green slime generously over his enemies from the cracks in his armor. Kaelin didn't forget the instructions. Under the monster's feet grew a stone peak, literally pinning him to the wall.
"Take that!" commanded Kira, tearing a short mace from her belt. "Grizzly centaur!"
The rest of the soldiers followed suit, and we, magicians, healers, and exorcists of spirits, stopped, helplessly staring at the wall and the powerful enemy. The corridor was filled with a wild roaring and crunching. The soldiers literally hammered the twitching and screaming crabber to the wall, furiously wielding weapons and shields. The ghost of Nathan rushed to his bald host, scuttling between the half-orc's legs. Doc ventured forward and touched Cray with his hand, infusing him with life. He touched him and immediately jumped back, rightly fearing impact with the crabber. Behind us excitedly danced the bog creature, waving his tiny fists and shouting something clearly obscene in his language. The words Govosyuk Matyuk I definitely caught. Under my legs was the spinning wolf, howling with excitement and looking at me. "Come on, owner, let's go and bite him just once." But I was not thinking about biting now. I turned around and searched the darkness with all my available senses. I didn't want to miss the crabber's relatives. Soon, the grisly centaur fell with a crash to the stone floor. Before my eyes flashed a line about getting experience. The warriors reluctantly parted, breathing wearily. Burned, at the full level of fatigue, no less. What else did I expect? We had walked right into a meat grinder. Here, dedication would not be enough.
especially at our level. If there had been two, said Kira, rising from the floor with the spear of the crabber, many would have departed for the revival checkpoint. Damn, too bad about my sword.
I'll buy you a new one, I hastened to assure her. She had saved us from certain death.
You will, nodded Kira. I assure that you will. And you'll give me Stump Eyes.
Stumpy agrees, said the bog monster, clinging to Kira's foot. Oh, lady, savior, I gift myself to you.
Savior, gifting himself, I too had saved his skin. Of course he will not be gifted, he is simply expressing his extreme gratitude. Before it was my knee he was clinging to. But I was being quite severe with him, and Kira was kind. That's why the creature was being attached. For revenge, I am going to call her Kira the Bog Creature. Not here, but in real life, and when we are alone.
Oh, drawled Kira, patting the creature on the top of his head. My reputation level has increased with him. Honey, you're mine. Have some fish.
Thank you, Kira. I came to my senses at the last moment and called her by her game name rather than her real one. If not for you, there would be one bog creature less in Valdira.
It worked, the half-orc nodded. Respect! What a reaction, dammit!
While Baum uttered his appreciation, he managed to gather from the floor the cool remains of the crabber and hide them in his bag. I saw fragments of the shell and the terrible claw. Now Baum reached eagerly for the spear clutched in Kira's hand.
I'll keep the spear,
Kira smiled sweetly, throwing the long pole behind her back.
The weapon is not much, but if you need to get someone in the last minute, it's a sweet deal.
What about a sword? Asked Cray.
I have another one. My last one. I forgot that crabbers love to ruin enemy artillery. It's not a claw they have, but a miniature crusher. And he got my shield, too. Sorry for the friendly fire, said Kaelin. I didn't change my spells, and that was the result.
Now the apology was accepted. But if it was something above the rank of fiery thread, then a couple of our friends would fly.
It's not your fault, Cray immediately rushed to her defense. Happens to all of us.
That's right, I nodded. It happens. I screwed up, too. I didn't see him until he started to attack.
Me too, said Kira with annoyance. I barely had time to react.
And what if this crabber missed the soldiers in the front and jumped on us?
Doc voiced his concern, carefully reeling in the Ajaj.
We would immediately end up with nothing, I said. No armor, no life. Damn, this is a problem.
Cray, did you also not see the monster until he started to attack?
Nope, the discouraged dwarf shook his head. Didn't even pay him a glance.
Kira, any ideas? I asked, not hesitating to ask the advice of a more experienced party fighter.
Well, we know the main thing, she shrugged. We can kill a lone crabber, even if he attacks suddenly. Moreover, we killed him without using the prepared surprises, which is good. What remains to be determined is how we will cope with two at once. Again, without surprises, just with our gear and skills.
Damn it, we should have given the final blow to the elf, belatedly said Baum.
You were beating him with such rage that it was scary even approaching you, I chuckled.
Yes, smiled the half-orc. We are strong and ferocious.
Rest for 5 minutes, I ordered, first falling to the floor. We have to think.
Oh!
I leapt up instantly. Idea!
What?
Kaelin was interested.
Interesting,
said the younger brother of the Black Baroness.
Fire thread, I blurted out. If you regularly shoot not at the ceiling but at waist level, then it should hit any lurking crabbers, right? But damn.
You can't let a mage go in front, Kira nodded, understanding. One hit, if that, and hello, revival. It won't work. Ross, we won't change anything, just triple the caution. Poke weapons in every niche and hole.
If you notice a peculiar build-up, shoot coal or something. This is the only way.
What? I wasn't slow to inquire.
Judging by your quest, the crabbers are here on tour, and it is necessary to destroy the whole party, and this means that the creatures do not respawn. If only we knew their total.
At least a dozen, I sighed. And this is the most optimistic forecast. I think there are many more. Warriors, mages. The rest watched us with uncomprehending faces. All but Orbit, he played with Nathan. Explain it to them, I asked Kira. The paladin beamed happily and began to expound of what we were talking about. Such knowledge was useful. All listened, spiritually preparing for future horrors. All is simple. A crab is a crab, after all, normal marine crabs, just so huge that they resemble horses. A crabber, it sounds menacing. 3 claws for the 2 of them, a weapon or magic, plus thick bony armor, or both. They are fast and can walk on any open area, downright horsemen of the apocalypse. The fish creatures, they support the crabbers during underwater expeditions. I personally have never seen this herd because they do not depart from the ocean bottom, but much is heard about them. It is a tremendous hodgepodge of different fishes which perform different functions, exploration, aiding attacks, and a cover during retreat. And these fish do a lot more for their damned owners, including acting as a live food stock on a rainy day.
And most importantly, said Kirea the Protectress, this is the commander of the detachment. They have a leader for sure, and certainly this is not a simple crabber.
What one, then? Which one? Doc asked.
A horrible one. Very bad. Think of him as a mini-boss, and you can't go wrong. The paladin sighed heavily.
But we have to kill him, I said slowly. The squad must be destroyed completely.
We're done. We're all going to die here,
foolishly began Doc, clutching his head in both his hands.
This is the end. Even the most brilliant doctoring will not be able to save all at once.
I'm more and more interested, Ross, mused Kalen.
Where did you manage to find such quests? Wherever I go, it's the same. A mouse in the kitchen, bats in the attic. My biggest quest, take a walk in the forest and kill a gray wolf. And then you, kobolds, crabbers, werewolves, bog creatures, how do you do it?
I have no idea, I shrugged, seeing that everyone was now staring at me. Most of them are purely chance. Don't worry, sooner or later you too will be so lucky.
And not only quests, equipment, and what's more, a pet, Kira said. Where do you even get those?
Kira could have kept quiet. A walking disaster. She had clearly developed lots of questions.
If you only knew about the evil intended to me by the goddess Snesse and the future goddess sleeping sweetly in my private room, but I will not tell about this. I had grown over with secrets like a spy, but I still didn't want to reveal anything.
Can we move on? I suggested.
Let's move, growled the militant half-orc. The bag is still empty.
Interesting, do players ever even come here?
Corridors forever, you can go mad like this.
Kira said, obviously remembering something. Who knows? Probably.
Okay, moving on. But first, let's check one small thing. In another 10 minutes, we moved forwards again, but this time, at the head of the group, rustled Nathan. This was our improvised front line, designed to take the first blow. If, of course, crabbers do react to ghostly beings, in principle they should. Crabbers are extremely aggressive to all but their relatives, and in any case, we will soon find out if they react or not. The next attack wasn't from a crabber, but it was no less aggressive and unexpected. In the middle of the corridor there was a kind of cross of gutters filled with running waters, no more than half a step in width, the flow hardly noticeable.
The ghost Nathaniel cheerfully jumped over it, and he was thrown up, a blow from which he was sent almost all the way to the ceiling in a blinding white light. To put it plainly, Nathan practically saddled Lightning, but he survived by the skin of his teeth. Nathan's body was nearly dispelled, the misty cloud of his body hardly visible. A spear was plunged into the river by our sure-handed paladin. And again, and again, only on the third plunge, Kira stopped, continuing to hold the spear at the ready, peering into the water.